From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, could a pending Supreme Court decision open the doors for students to have choice in education, including religious education? A case out of Montana could alter anti-religious education laws in almost 20 states. Montana Congressman Greg Gianforte is here with the details. And a 69-page report examining the culture and ethics of U.S. Special Operation Forces concluded that there are foundational issues at every level as it pertains to leadership, discipline, and accountability. Could what is being taught at our military academies be part of the problem? Retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin answers that question. Also, some Democrats are expressing concern with Bernie Sanders' rise in the Iowa polls, where he is within striking distance of frontrunner Joe Biden. What is their concern? Are they afraid America is not ready for full-fledged socialism? Well, what's fueling Bernie's rise? We'll talk about it with Scott Rasmussen, pollster and publisher of ScottRasmussen.com. And David Clausen will join me to talk about how socialism stacks up to biblical teaching. And finally, later this week, an amazing documentary that tells the story of Justice Clarence Thomas hits the big screen. We'll talk about it with the director and producer later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. All right, a virtual earthquake in public education. That's how one of the heads of the American Federation of Teachers Union described a case that was argued before the Supreme Court last week that if the court rules in favor of the students could open the door to school choice for children in nearly 20 states. At issue is a tax credit scholarship program that allows taxpayers to direct up to $150 for a tax deduction. And this goes to an educational scholarship program in the state of Montana. The program allows students to use the scholarship for private education, including religious education. The prospects that the court could overturn the state's prohibition against the state actually struck down the law, the court did in the state. If the Supreme Court rules in favor of the children and school choice, this could drive the left crazy. In fact, responding to a Huffington Post article on the court case, Democratic presidential candidate Elizabeth Warren said, quote, states should focus on funding public schools, not private ones, especially not ones that maintain anti-LGBTQ plus policies. We must ensure that every kid, especially LGBTQ plus kids, get a high quality education, end quote. Well, shouldn't we be pursuing policies that allow children to get high-quality education, regardless of whether it is public or private? Well, join me now to talk about this, Congressman Greg Gianforte, who represents Montana's at-large district, and he filed an amicus brief on behalf of the students with the Supreme Court. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's very good to be with you.
Now, let me, as I start here, your interest in this case goes beyond just being a member of Congress, in this case being before the Supreme Court. You have a long history of supporting educational choice in your state. You've served on a number of institutions that oversee the standardization of independent schools. You've served as the chairman of a private school. So you have a long history of being interested in education and education choice.
Well, I have, and it was partially – I got there originally – because of our own four children, and knowing, and every parent knows this, each child is created differently. And a one-size-fits-all approach just doesn't help each child reach their full potential. That's why I believe parents know what's best for their kids, and they ought to be able to pick the education that best fits their child.
Well, let's talk about the details in this case, just for the benefit of our listeners, because while it's a Montana case, this could affect the laws in about 18 other states.
Yeah, that's right. And this at its heart is a First Amendment case centering on religious freedom. It goes back to some essentially our Constitution has a Blaine Amendment. Many constitutions have this amendment. It originated with anti-Catholic sentiment in our country back in the end of the 1800s.
Right.
And it basically says, and so that's at the root of this. This case, because we've had challenges to different Supreme Courts, state Supreme Courts that have been conflicting, we were very pleased to see the U.S. Supreme Court take up this case to resolve the situation for us. And at the heart of it is, you know, whether or not parents can pick the school that's best for their kids.
Yeah, when I was in the legislature in Louisiana, proposed a tax credit plan similar to this, where taxpayers can mark or give money to a scholarship, and they get a tax deduction for giving that money. So this is money that taxpayers in the state of Montana, or money that they give, and they get a tax deduction for giving it into this scholarship program. It's about $3 million, not a huge amount of money, and then the students can apply for the scholarship. Is that correct?
Correct. And this is targeted at lower income families, because the reality is wealthy families can afford to send their kids wherever they want. So the current practices disproportionately disadvantage lower income families. It's part of the reason why in Montana, our family helped found ACE Scholarships, which is a private sector parental choice program. We have over 1,000 kids on scholarship, about 1,000 kids on scholarship in Montana right now. And we've seen remarkable results and helped move that program out nationally, because when you give parents the ability to choose the education that's best for their kids, kids thrive. And ultimately, that should be our goal, to help each child reach their God-given potential.
But based upon the opposition to this program and those that are lining up against your position before the court, you have the teacher unions, you have the federations of educators, and then you have nonprofit groups like Freedom From Religion Foundation. That in and of itself speaks volumes. But it would appear that many in the educational establishment are more interested in protecting the establishment than ensuring children have the best education possible.
Yeah, and we have to remember what the First Amendment is all about. It's freedom of religion, not freedom from religion. And if we go back to when Blaine originally put these anti-Catholic provisions into these into the constitutions, remember we started every day in public school with prayer, and we had the Ten Commandments on the wall. So
right.
We've come a long way here from what the other side is arguing is that they have a right to be free from religion in all sectors. And that's not what our Constitution says.
Yeah, this goes back to Congressman James Blaine, who the concern back then was the schools actually did have religion in the schools, but the growth in Catholicism and immigrants coming from countries where Catholicism was kind of the background, this was kind of to stop that. And so it was religious hostility then. This corrects that. This case, if it goes forward, when you look at the issue of public education, last year the report card on the National Assessment of Educational Progress showed a continuing decline in test scores. I mean, I would think, Congressman, that the interest here would be to give, as you said, parents choice, but kids the best options available for them so that they can succeed. That does not seem to be the interest of the educational establishment.
Yeah, and I think here parents know what's best for their kids. When we studied this issue in Montana, 78% of the high school dropouts come from lower income families. So the lack of choice in
right.
parental in it disadvantage, and if we're ever going to break the cycle of poverty, without a high school diploma, it's just really hard to succeed in life. And
yes.
and yet we have kids. We've heard these stories over and over again. We've heard kids that are trapped in school systems where they may be getting bullied or exposed to drugs or violence. And those parents, wealthy families have an out. They can pick a different school. Lower income families don't. Most of these parental choice programs focused on the lower income families to help those kids get ahead in life. I would think the other side would be for this, but clearly they're not.
You would think so. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Thanks so much for joining us. Congressman Greg Gianforte is my guest from Montana. The you mentioned the lower-income kids that are dropping out of school that are not having opportunities. You mentioned parental involvement. I mean, if you allow parents to have choice in education, that's a doorway through which the engagement of parents takes place, and that's going to have an impact upon the child's education. So we should be doing things that would bring parents to a position of more engagement with their children when it comes to education, should we not?
We should. And this parental choice, these partial scholarships that make it easier for a low-income family to pick an educational course that best fits their child can get them into an environment where they could succeed. And it's interesting, in the program, we've been running this program in Montana now, ACE Scholarships, for a number of years. We've seen remarkably high graduation rates amongst our scholars when they get in an environment that matches their learning style. And this is, as parents and as a society, this is ought to be something we can agree on.
Now, don't you also see that once parents have that choice in education, that they become more involved in the education of their children?
They do. They do. And it produces better outcomes. And we know that a young person that doesn't graduate from high school, they're much more likely to continue to live in poverty. They're much more likely to end up in jail or involved with drugs in some way. And the statistics are very, very clear. This is about helping every child reach their God-given potential.
Yeah, I was talking at the end of the year with former Secretary of Education Bill Bennett about this. And when you look at these test scores, while there's been a three-point decline, what's most alarming is that the greatest percentage of decline is among students that you just described, those that need education to get out of poverty and to have a bright future. And those declines are even more significant. That's why I think opportunity of choice could change that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And we've seen it over and over again. And the stories, we have these young people come forward. There was a little girl in Billings, Montana, who so desperately wanted to get out of the situation she was in that she actually worked at a Burger King all summer long to save up the money, because her mom and dad, it was a single income family. They told her they couldn't afford the independent school she wanted to go to. She worked all summer because she so desperately wanted this. As a sophomore in high school, she earned what she could. The scholarship came alongside her. They never would have been able to afford it. She just graduated last year near the top of her class, and it was a great result and something we should all celebrate.
And something we should work to replicate across the country.
Yes.
With programs like this. Congressman Greg Gianforte, thanks so much for being with us, and thanks for leading out on what I believe is such an important issue.
Well, Tony, thank you for having me on.
All right. Folks, to find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Obviously, we'll be watching this as the court will issue an opinion later in the year, and it could upset things. It could be an earthquake, as the teacher union representative described. All right, when we come back, Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin joins me. Leadership issues in special operations. What's behind it? We'll talk about it next. Don't go away.
In the U.S., the rate of chemical abortions is at an all-time high. This increase is being driven by the abortion industry, which wants abortion pills available through the pharmacy in the mail, making do-it-yourself abortions the future of the abortion industry. Abortion advocates once claimed that legal abortion would prevent back-alley abortions, but the health complications that often result from chemical abortion are eerily similar to those of back-alley abortions. For more information, visit frc.org/chemicalabortion.
China has become one of the most totalitarian states in human history. The Chinese Communist Party restricts religious practice and oppresses religious minorities on a sweeping scale, targeting those of every faith. The Chinese Communist Party's consistent abuses of human rights prove that it cannot be treated just like any other country. The United States must address these violations in their trade and diplomatic dealings with China. For more information about the human rights crisis in China, visit frc.org/China.
What are you reading this winter? Looking for timely and original commentary on human dignity, marriage, and religious liberty? We've got you covered at frcblog.com. The content on our blog is written by our policy experts, FRC staff, as well as outside contributors. Read about a wide variety of topics like crimes in the criminal state of China, how Game of Thrones mainstreamed sexual exploitation, transgender regret, the rise of the detransitioners, and many more. Stand for truth by staying informed at frcblog.com.
What other trip to Israel can you take that combines walking where Jesus walked with meeting today's Israeli leaders? This is Tony Perkins, President of Family Research Council, inviting you to spend an incredible 9 days in Israel with me, General Jerry Boykin, and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann from June the 2nd through the 12th. You'll discover the roots of your faith and learn from experts about the geopolitical landscape of the region. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
We all need to be lectured sometimes. Family Research Council's new podcast features selected talks by top thinkers from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast podium takes on tough issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Listen with us to the lecture, then stick around afterward as we break down the content. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
Ever heard the term toxic masculinity? Hello, this is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council. Some progressive universities are offering courses to help men unlearn rigid definitions of masculinity, treating it as if it were a mental health condition. Thankfully, the culture doesn't have the last word on manhood. God does. Check out our StandCourageous.com for an event in your area. That's StandCourageous.com.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Right. At the same time that a special 69-page report, which examined the culture and ethics of U.S. Special Operations Forces, was released, stating that there are foundational problems as it pertains to leadership, discipline, and accountability in special operations, there was an article that uncovered that the dangerous political correctness that we saw during the Obama administration, unfortunately, is continuing in our nation's military. Mandatory curriculum at West Point addresses toxic masculinity. In fact, it has some cadets questioning the goals of the institution that trains America's military leaders. Now, the superintendent of West Point, Lieutenant General Darrell Williams, defended the curriculum, saying it, quote, improved combat readiness. I can think of another lieutenant general who would disagree. Joining me now is retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, founding member of Delta and a former former commanding general of both the U.S. Army Special Forces Command and the United States Army JFK Special Warfare Center. General, welcome back to Washington Watch. This thing has me tongue-tied. I can't it's amazing to me.
Yeah, I wish I was not on for this particular purpose, Tony.
I mean, at the same time that we have a review of special operation forces, and not just the Army, but all special operations forces. We've had a breakdown. They're saying that there are fundamental flaws in leadership, discipline, and accountability at all levels. But then at the same time, we look at what West Point is focusing on. Is there a connection?
Of course there is. I mean, look, this is a reflection of how we're training our officers, our non-commissioned officers, and even our enlisted people with this diversity focus. You know, this is it's diversity, it's inclusion, it's all this other stuff that was forced onto our military that contributes absolutely nothing to their readiness or their ability to go out and do their primary job. And what is their primary job? Let's keep remembering, let's keep reminding ourselves, it is to win the nation's wars. This contributes absolutely nothing. It's a reflection of the degradation of our society.
All right, let's talk specifically so our listeners know what we're talking about, what has been happening at West Point with these honorable living days.
Yeah, the cadets there were forced to attend mandatory events. That was a group. It was seminars and two movies that were shown called, and they were categorized all together of honorably living. Now, the seminars, they brought in some of the most toxic people that you could have brought in to talk about military readiness, and that included, for of all people, Jane Fonda. I mean, can you believe that? I mean, this is a woman that during the Vietnam era was actually working against the United States military, against the POWs in North Vietnam, and now she is featured in this. Cory Booker and the wife of the governor of California.
She's actually the producer of this documentary, right. Misrepresentation, which includes not only, as you said, Jane Fonda, but Rachel Maddow, Rosie O'Donnell, and mm-hmm. Gloria Steinem. This was debuted by the Oprah Winfrey Network.
Yeah.
And, I mean, what does this have to do with fighting and winning wars?
Has nothing to do with fighting and winning wars. In no way does this help enhance the readiness of our military. It is a reflection of what was forced on our military in the Obama administration. The disappointing thing is that it's still there, that the Trump administration has not purged our military of these kinds of things, which, Tony, they take up a lot of time. And this is not just at West Point. You have to do this right. same kind of stuff
the
military.
This is the cream of the crop when it comes to
That's
military
right.
leadership.
That's right.
West Point. Mm-hmm. You have to get a congressional mm-hmm. appointment to there. I mean, this is not just any institution. Most of these will go on to be military leaders. So, not only are we taking time away from essential military
preparation,
focus. We're seeding their minds with this, you know, it's diversity and inclusion. All sounds nice, but then race and genders. In fact, they jump in, like Gillette and all the others, into attacking masculinity, mm-hmm. Even questioning the phrase, be a man.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to the warrior class? I mean— Isn't that what it takes to build men warriors? I mean, mm-hmm. where are we headed with this?
To begin with, the Bible says in Exodus 15:3 that the Lord is a warrior.
Oh, by the way, they also attack the Bible.
They do attack the Bible. The second thing is George Orwell said we rest well in our beds at night because rough men stand ready to do violence against those who would threaten us. Rough men. This whole idea of hyper-masculinity, which is one of the phrases that they've coined now, hyper-masculinity, is absolute nonsense, has nothing to do with reality. It is about destroying men
right.
because they are the foundations of the family, the men. The men are so important, and the men are walking out of their families today all over America, and this is a reflection of exactly what the crisis in masculinity is all about.
Yeah, in fact, quickly, Caroline Heldman, one of the speakers here, professor of politics, says masculinity is a rejection of everything that's feminine,
mm-hmm.
and then goes on to attack the Bible. Throughout most of our history, there's been this belief that men and women are fundamentally different creatures, and it probably begins with the Bible. Well, that was mm-hmm. Lise Elliott that made that comment. This is why we're doing the Stand Courageous Men's Conference.
Tony, it is, and it's interesting, too, because we've been telling guys that as we go and speak to them that masculinity is under attack, and this is just further evidence of how serious this attack is when you're at the most prestigious institute in the military trying to downgrade and degrade masculinity.
If there was ever a place you needed masculinity, I would think it would be in the military.
You would think so.
Yeah. Men, that's why you need to come and join us this weekend in Pensacola, Florida at our Stand Courageous Conference. Check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. Follow the links over to the Stand Courageous site because we've got more of them coming. General, I'll see you Friday in Pensacola.
I'll be there, ready
All right.
to go.
All right, folks, don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch right after this.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council and host of Washington Watch. I invite you to join our family and thousands of others across the country in standing on the Word of God as we go into 2020, the global year of the Bible, by joining in a two-year family chronological Bible reading plan. I can assure you that your family will be powerfully impacted by reading God's Word and growing in the understanding of His truth together. The readings take only 15 to 20 minutes a day, with Sundays set aside for a family or small group discussion. To join us, simply go to TonyPerkins.com and click on Stand on the Word with FRC. That's TonyPerkins.com or call 800-225-4008. That's 800-225-4008. Let's stand together on the Word of God and change the world, beginning in our own home.
Last year, my brother Josh, a 37-year-old married father with five kids under the age of nine, announced he was becoming a woman. Josh changed his name to Melissa and now requires everyone to use she, her pronouns when referring to him. If the grandparents refuse to do this, they've been threatened with limited access to their grandchildren. My tall, handsome, muscular brother began taking strong female hormones that transformed him into a different person. He began wearing dresses, wigs, heels, and makeup in public. He will have to stay on female hormones until the day he dies. He refuses to answer to the name Josh now. He says Josh is dead. There was even some type of symbolic burial ceremony to say goodbye to Josh, once and for all. You've been listening to an excerpt from a six-part series telling the true account of a family impacted by the transgender movement. To read this important blog series, visit frc.org/cult.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right, a new movie. It's a documentary. It hits the screens this week, out January the 31st. It is about Clarence Thomas, Supreme Court Justice, created equal. Clarence Thomas, in his own words, he has faced unbelievable attacks on his character. Similar to what Justice Brett Kavanaugh did, but I guess, you know, Clarence Thomas was one of the first. Well, this documentary gives insight into the man, his faith, his personal life, his story. It's a compelling story, and for some, it's actually changed the way they see Clarence Thomas. Joining me now is the man behind the documentary. He directed it, produced it, wrote it. He is the president of Manifold Productions, Michael Pack. Michael, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Absolutely. Let me just start with this. Why the story of Clarence Thomas? Why is it important to tell this story?
Well, I think it's a great story. I mean, as you say, it's indicative of lots of things that came after the confirmation part, including the Brett Kavanaugh confirmation hearings. But I think his story goes well. It's a much bigger story. It's really a story of overcoming horrible obstacles, of resilience in the face of those obstacles, and of a refusal to define himself as a victim, and a man who was able to rely on his faith to see him through. I think it's a great story, and it's a rags-to-riches story. You know, he began life in dire poverty in the segregated South, and he rose from there to the heights of the Supreme Court. It's a great story on many levels.
It is. It's one of those, American stories of, as you said, rag to riches, from poverty to sitting on the Supreme Court. It really shows that the dream is alive in America, where whatever you put your heart to, and if you, you know, in his case, the faith is a very compelling part of this, and I think it's been a very, very important guiding aspect of his life. And it just shows that God blesses those who put their hands to work and set out to serve. And it is a remarkable story. But let me ask you this, Michael. What was it that motivated you to begin to do the research
to create this documentary? I mean, something had to trigger the desire to do this story on Clarence Thomas.
Well, I had heard through mutual friends that he was, that Justice Thomas was getting fired of his enemies, defining his life story and spreading misconceptions, sometimes outright lies. And I spoke to him. I had mainly known about him through the confirmation battle. But when I did the research and found out what a great story it was, I really wanted to tell it. And the next step, though, was to decide that it should be Clarence Thomas telling his story in his own words. So, excuse me. So it's based on 30 hours of interviews that I conducted over 6 months with Justice Thomas and his wife, Ginny. And mostly Justice Thomas, that he looks right to camera, tells viewers what it was like to go through his life experiences. So it's his story, the way he experienced his life, including the confirmation hearings and all the way up to today, because he is himself a great storyteller, a great powerful speaker with a wonderful voice.
And a great sense of humor.
And a great sense of humor.
He has a laugh. He has a laugh that is infectious. He loves to laugh.
And as you said, he began life in very difficult circumstances, and it didn't ever take his humor away from him. He began, he was born in Pinpoint, Georgia, a Gullah-speaking area on the coast of Georgia, so English wasn't his first language. His father left before he could remember, raised by his mother, who then took him to Savannah, where, as he said, he went from rural poverty to urban squalor, didn't have enough to eat, cold in the winter. His mother would take him to school, and he'd just leave and wander the streets of Savannah. No one cared. And out of that drift for years, she finally realized she couldn't take care of her two boys and brought them to her father, his grandfather, to raise. And that's what turned Justice Thomas's life around. His grandfather gave him biblically inspired precepts, we'll work from son to son, old man can't is dead. And he had converted to Catholicism, and he sent Justice Thomas to parochial schools, segregated parochial schools. This is still the South of the 50s, run by Irish nuns who also gave him self-discipline, religious values, hard work. And Justice Thomas thrived, and that's where he got his faith and his values. And he thrived in that environment. And as you know, he decided he wanted to be a priest and entered the seminary and was going to be a priest. And then the seminaries, which were all white at the time, he was just among the first groups desegregating them. It was there that he lost his faith, only to recapture it later. I mean, it's a very powerful story.
Well, don't tell the rest of the story because I want people to see the movie. how can folks find out more about the movie?
Well, they have to go to our website, justicethomasmovie.com, where all the places it's going to be playing are listed. It's all over the country. It's in, 22 theaters starting on Friday, but then it's succeeding weeks too. And if it's not in a place where your listeners are, they can sign up. And if there are 30 or more of them, we can arrange an event at their city. But the first step is go to our documentary, our website, justicethomasmovie.com, and they can see the trailer there too.
All right. We'll direct people to that and to we'll have it up on our website as well. Michael, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
All right, folks, check it out at the website. Don't go away. We're coming back with Scott Rasmussen right after this with more Washington Watch. Don't leave us.
In the U.S., the rate of chemical abortions is at an all-time high. This increase is being driven by the abortion industry, which wants abortion pills available through the pharmacy in the mail, making do-it-yourself abortions the future of the abortion industry. Abortion advocates once claimed that legal abortion would prevent back-alley abortions, but the health complications that often result from chemical abortion are eerily similar to those of back-alley abortions. For more information, visit frc.org/chemical-abortion.
China has become one of the most totalitarian states in human history. The Chinese Communist Party restricts religious practice and oppresses religious minorities on a sweeping scale, targeting those of every faith. The Chinese Communist Party's consistent abuses of human rights prove that it cannot be treated just like any other country. The United States must address these violations in their trade and diplomatic dealings with China.
For more information about the human rights crisis in China, visit frc.org/China.
What are you reading this winter? Looking for timely and original commentary on human dignity, marriage, and religious liberty? We've got you covered at frcblog.com. The content on our blog is written by our policy experts, FRC staff, as well as outside contributors. Read about a wide variety of topics like crimes in the criminal state of China, how Game of Thrones mainstreamed sexual exploitation, transgender regret, the rise of the detransitioners, and many more. Stand for truth by staying informed at frcblog.com.
What other trip to Israel can you take that combines walking where Jesus walked with meeting today's Israeli leaders? This is Tony Perkins, president of Family Research Council, inviting you to spend an incredible 9 days in Israel with me, General Jerry Boykin, and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann from June the 2nd through the 12th. You'll discover the roots of your faith and learn from experts about the geopolitical landscape of the region. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
We all need to be lectured sometimes. Family Research Council's new podcast features selected talks by top thinkers from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast podium takes on tough issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Listen with us to the lecture, then stick around afterward as we break down the content. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
Ever heard the term toxic masculinity? Hello, this is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council. Some progressive universities are offering courses to help men unlearn rigid definitions of masculinity, treating it as if it were a mental health condition. Thankfully, the culture doesn't have the last word on manhood. God does. Check out our StandCourageous.com for an event in your area. That's StandCourageous.com.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right. Iowa is just around the corner. The Iowa caucuses next week. And some Democrats are concerned because Bernie Sanders has been rising in the polls. In fact, is within striking distance of the front runner, Joe Biden. Now, the question is, what are they concerned about? Is it because he is unabashedly a socialist? Do they not think America's ready for socialism? Will it hurt the party brand? Take a little bit more than that, I think. But what's behind his rise? Is it the socialism tag that is causing him to climb in the polls? Joining me now to talk more about this is Scott Rasmussen, pollster and publisher of ScottRasmussen.com. Scott, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's always great to be with you. And, you know, I kind of chuckle when I hear everybody talk about this Sanders surge, because it is true. In some recent Iowa polling, we've seen him moving into the lead, gaining ground. But the reality is that 6 months ago, Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders were the top two candidates in the polls. Elizabeth Warren has been in third place for a long time. So in the grand scheme of things, not a lot has changed. However, like Donald Trump 4 years ago, a lot of the establishment has dismissed Bernie Sanders, and they were sure that by the time we got to Iowa, he wouldn't be doing this well. And in fact, he is.
Well, you mentioned it's kind of shake everything as it has shaken out. You've got Biden and Sanders. I mean, we were there 6 months ago, but then we had a dozen or more candidates all in the mix. They've fallen right out, and we're kind of back to where we started.
We are, and I think if you're looking for clarity, we're not going to find it after Iowa or even after New Hampshire. There's not that many delegates divided. Different candidates will claim victory after Iowa. And we can never lose sight of the fact that this year something different is going on. Early voting in the Super Tuesday states has already started. They've been voting for 2 weeks in Minnesota. California starts voting on Monday. And because of that, because of the changing dynamics, we have to keep Michael Bloomberg in the conversation. He's spending a ton of money in those states. If Sanders does well in the early states and Biden falters, Bloomberg could be the guy to pick up the slack.
Let's talk for a minute. I want to dissect Bernie Sanders and his, unashamed support of socialism. He describes himself democratic socialism. What role is that playing in his support? Is America moving toward socialism?
The Democratic Party, the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, is absolutely moving towards socialism. America is not, at least not socialism as Bernie Sanders defines it. But what you see, the driving force in the Democratic Party these days is a desire to win in November. They want to defeat President Trump. There are two theories of how to do it. The centrists say we have to win over swing voters. We have to worry about voters in places like Pennsylvania and Michigan and Wisconsin. The progressive wing said no. It's trying to appeal to the center is why we lost 4 years ago, why we lost to Donald Trump. We need someone who can stir up the passion and excite young voters like Bernie Sanders.
It's going to be interesting.
And by the way, Tony, I should tell you, there was a moment in a recent Democratic debate where I thought Bernie Sanders, in a certain way, looked like Donald Trump did 4 years ago. What happened was he was asked, "How can you possibly pay for the cost of your health care plans?" Question that a lot of people have been asking, and Sanders just dismissed the expert and said, "Look, I believe it's going to save money. If you just do what I say, we're going to save money. It's not going to cost us anything." He talked right past the moderator. He talked right past the established economics of this, and he spoke to the progressive base that just believes that something has to be done. And that's his great strength and his great weakness. It could get him the nomination. If he were to get the nomination, I do believe Donald Trump is very likely to be reelected, and because the Democrats would forfeit states like Pennsylvania and Michigan.
Well, Scott, speaking of that, I have a clip of him when he was asked about his views on socialism and how does that compare to Venezuela. I want to play that clip and get your response to it.
Sure.
I have a clip on Bernie and socialism in Venezuela. Do we got that clip?
We're not talking about Venezuela. We're not talking about Cuba. We are talking about the concept, which I don't think is a radical idea, of having a government which works to represent the needs of the middle class and working families rather than just the top 1%.
Now, that was actually a clip from 2016. I think we've got another clip. Bobby, do we have another clip on? Yeah, let's play the other clip.
We must recognize that in the 21st century, in the wealthiest country in the history of the world, economic rights are human rights. And that is what I mean by democratic socialism.
Notice he doesn't answer the question. He talks right past it, as you were saying, speaking to that base that is energized by that.
You know, if you ask voters what they think socialism means, they think they don't believe it means turning more power over to the government. They don't think it means higher taxes. They think it means something along the idea of more community control, decision making closer to home, a lot more like federalism than socialism. What Bernie Sanders is tapping into is there is a lot of frustration with the way things are working these days. It's the same attitude that Donald Trump tapped into 4 years ago. In fact, in 2015, I wrote a column saying it wasn't going to be Clinton versus Bush because voters were much more excited about a possible Trump-Sanders matchup. I mean, there is that drive in the base of both parties. Having said that, what Bernie Sanders thinks of as socialism involves a lot of government control, involves turning a lot of power and money over to the federal government. And as a result, he ends up with a large number. The general attitude he taps into, he connects with people on, the very specific proposals are going to turn a lot of people off.
So, all right, let me ask you this question, Scott. Are we seeing the nation becoming more divided ideologically when it comes to not just not from a partisan standpoint, but just from an ideological standpoint?
Yes. You know, politically, ideologically, we have come to a point where a lot of people are frustrated, where both sides are saying there's something wrong and it's the other guys that are creating the problem. It's the other ideology. I realistically think that part of the problem is our political system is lagging behind. You know, we're still talking in terms of the world that existed before the digital revolution, and neither party has really found a way to connect and grapple with some of these new issues. And so there is this ideological divide and frustration that's out there. But there's not, there is nothing close to the idea that we should be turning more of our lives over to government control. If anything, it's heading in the opposite direction, a recognition that we need more individual freedom and liberty.
One final question for you, Scott Rasmussen. When the when Bernie, you know, building his platform, probably going to do well in Iowa, how much of an influence is he going to have over the Democratic Party platform and its embracing of socialistic views?
Oh, he'll have a huge impact, not just Bernie Sanders, but many of his supporters. People like AOC will have an impact on it. But the big question is, what is the Democratic convention going to look like? I think there's about a 1 in 3 chance that we go into that convention without any candidate having a majority of the delegates. And that creates a situation where those battles over the platform become enormously personal. And the battle to decide who gets the nomination becomes very tense within the party. And in fact, the last time there was a contested convention in American history was before I was born. It was in 1952. And what happened then, the Democrats had a candidate a little bit like Bernie Sanders. Estes Kefauver was the liberal. He went in and had the lead on the first ballot. But President Truman said, no, he's too radical. We need a more establishment candidate like Adlai Stevenson to carry the banner this year. That would be the equivalent of Bernie Sanders leading in the delegate count going into the negotiation and Joe Biden winning the nomination. Something like that happens, there is going to be an explosion within the Democratic Party. And so when you ask about the impact over the platform, the way this race takes shape, the way things play out, if it's very competitive, you're going to see some real difficulties and real ideological differences among the Democrats.
And that will set up a sharp contrast with the Republicans. It'll be very fascinating to watch. Scott Rasmussen, as always, great to have you on. Thanks so much for sharing your insights with us.
Thank you. Have a great day.
All right. Thanks, Scott Rasmussen. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. He does do a regular report, ScottRasmussen.com. Good insights. All right. I want to shift for the few minutes we've got left to talk about this idea of socialism, because there is an element in the country. It's not, as Scott said, it's the country's not moving in totality in that direction, but there is a strong element. And as Christians, how should we look at that? What does the Bible have to say as it pertains to these policies of socialism and that form of government? Joining me now to talk about this is FRC's Director of Christian Ethics and Biblical Worldview, David Clawson. David, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
All right. So you heard the conversation I was having with Scott. There is an element moving sharply in this direction that Bernie Sanders represents, clearly not the entire country. But there's some young people and even some Christians that might be enamored with Bernie Sanders and his, populist, I guess I don't want to give populism a bad name, I'll just say socialist view. But I will say this, and Scott made kind of indirectly, the terms have lost their meanings.
Yes.
So people don't really understand what socialism is. It's not the dirty word that it is and used to be. They've given it a new connotation. But let's just jump into this from a standpoint of, does the Bible have anything to say about this?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it is important to define our terms, whether we're calling it socialism, democratic socialism, central planning, the welfare state. at the root of what Bernie Sanders is getting at, what socialism at its core is advocating for, is the idea that government controls or exercises a great control over the means of production and distribution, which is essentially the government's job is to divvy up goods, and as an implication of that is the elimination of private property. And that's an issue that the Bible actually definitely talks about.
But doesn't it also put government in an extreme position of power, which runs counter to the decentralization principle that we see throughout Scripture?
It does. And I think the best passage to go for when we're looking for the purpose of government when you go to the Scripture is Romans chapter 13. And in verse 4 it says, "For the one in authority is God's servant for your good." And so from the perspective of the Bible, the role of government is to promote justice and keep the peace. So government is supposed to be for the people, and it's really hard to see how the government can legitimately be for the people, serving the interest of its citizens, if it wants to take control of the property and possessions of its people. And you can go through the whole New Testament, and you will not see a word on the lips of Jesus about the distribution of wealth. It's just not there.
Right. In fact, I often use that when he talked to the rich young ruler, and he said, give up what you have to the poor. He doesn't tell him to give it to the government to give right. to the poor. It's a direct action. But from a government theory standpoint, socialism is a transitional form of government.
Yes.
Moving toward communism, which is hostile to faith.
It is. Yeah. Communism is total control of the means of production and private property. And you've seen wherever this has been practiced, whether that was in Russia or China, it is the people who bear the brunt of government coercion is religion. There's no place for it in a communist form of government. One passage I think that is really interesting when we're thinking about the role of government and if government's being just is actually a passage from the Old Testament when Samuel, he's been a judge, and it's nearing the end of his tenure, and he actually appeals to the people on whether he was a just judge or not. And it's in 1 Samuel 12, and here's what Samuel actually says. He says, "Testify against me in the presence of the Lord and his anointed. Whose ox have I taken? Whose donkey have I taken? Whom have I cheated? Whom have I oppressed?" And the people answer, "You've not cheated or oppressed anyone. You've not taken anything from anyone's hands," which is interesting. The basis for Samuel's appeal for his own integrity is that he didn't take people's stuff.
Right, right. And, that's a principle that we find in even the Ten Commandments, the moral law of God.
The moral law, the Eighth Commandment, "Thou shalt not steal," which that presumes ownership of property and possessions.
Right.
But then the Tenth Commandment, "Thou shalt not covet." The moral law of God says that even the desire, the illicit desire for someone else's stuff is contrary to God's law.
And that's why we have the form of government we do, with the protections that are contained within our founding documents.
Yes.
Because we understand the nature of men. Well, David, we're out of time. I want to thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, folks, I want to thank you for joining us as well. Until next time, check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. Check out the Stand Courageous Conference. Join us in Pensacola. But until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, "You've done everything you could do, and you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand." By all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.